If you are new here at the City Bible Forum, let me just say that that is what our practice is. We're in the city, we do the Bible, and it's a forum. When I say we do the Bible, we look at the Bible, and which bit of the Bible do we look at? Generally, the next bit. In the last week, we were looking at the first part of Matthew chapter 9, and so today we're doing the end of Matthew chapter 9, the beginning of Matthew chapter 10. And we're picking up on that Galilee, that district around the place, and so for Jesus to visit all the towns and villages, that really is three or four a day, and that's 4 months of visiting, of speaking, of healing, of interaction with people, and different sorts of people. Some people are introverts, some people are extroverts. I'm more up the extrovert end of the spectrum, but one of my mates who's an introvert, he spends a little bit of time with people, then he needs to go back to the computer screen and spend time in the just on his own, whereas some of us are more kind of out there and we get our energy, but Jesus is, but still me, and I'm more extrovert than most. I come and be extroverted here for an hour at lunchtime, and I need to kind of spend an hour on my own before my next meeting at 3 o'clock, and I just psych myself up for my next meeting. And Jesus has been doing it three towns a day for 3-4 months, and it's exhausting and it's draining, and I just take it that he is whacked and just totally over people. But he, see 36, when he saw the crowds. And for me, it's just like a station, and it's about 8:15 in the morning, and there's just people just surging out of the railway station, and thousands and tens of thousands of people just appearing from the underground and distributing themselves around George Street and Bathurst Street. And Jesus is looking at the city worker, and he sees them, and they are harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. It's a strange thing on first impression to call a person in the crowd a sheep. And for me, I went down and visited my Uncle Ron's farm at Yakandanda in Victoria, and they have their thousands of sheep. And I saw them, they're directionless, unless the sheepdogs come out and kind of show them the way to go. But that is Jesus's, that is the Bible's general diagnosis of people, not just country people, but all people, harassed, leaderless, bullied, moving as a flock, bruised, adrift. Where do we go? What is our movement as a people? And I've been charging the last couple of weeks here at the City Bible Forum that the big flock of city sheep, the big flock of Sydney sheep, what do we charge after? What is our flock running towards? What do we get caught up with as the whole flock runs in this direction? I think we're charging after property. I think we're charging after status. And I think we're charging after body image. That's where everybody is running towards. We think status will bring satisfaction. We run towards status. Everybody is surging towards status. We think if I get the promotion in the job, that will make me feel better, and it will be satisfied, and my life will be all right, and then I really will enjoy life. But you know who enjoys their job? People who haven't been there long. That's who enjoys the job. We're here in the central business district of Sydney, and there are lots and lots of harassed and helpless sheep. Where are you in this? Where am I in this? I'm not kind of a detached omniscient observer, and you're not a detached omniscient absorber. If I push the metaphor, where am I? I'm on the side of the mountain with the sheep, with the other sheep. If I bring it into reality, I'm coming out of Town Hall Station at 8:15 in the morning with you. We're sheep without a shepherd, without a guide, without a direction. I'm not going to do the detail here, but we've just got to grab that Jesus, in the first place, is not talking about city workers in Sydney. There's a secondary application, but in the first place, he's talking to Jewish people back then in the first century. And if you're a Bible reader, and the Jewish people were, that metaphor of being a sheep and whether or not I've got a good shepherd, that's been a metaphor that has been around for centuries. And Isaiah talked about it, Hosea talked about it, Jeremiah talked about it, Ezekiel talked about it. And the idea, the constant refrain, was that the leaders of the people of Israel had failed to lead the people to God. And what the people need was guidance, what they need is teaching, direction. But the leaders of Israel have failed, and so Jesus sees these sheep without a shepherd. And see 36, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. Compassion. there is a welling up, a great welling up, a deep welling up of emotion in his heart. This deep feeling of sympathy, of wanting to do something to help, this deep feeling of love. And it is very important for us to hear this. It's very important for us to be reminded of the compassion of Jesus here. Compassion, we just got to grab this though. Compassion doesn't mean that Jesus approves of everything that I do. Some people would think that Jesus just looks down and feels compassionate to those people coming up out of Town Hall Station. And so he just approves of everything and thinks that everything everyone in Sydney does is great. That's not it at all. When you read through Matthew's gospel, at the birth of Jesus, Matthew writes, she'll give birth to a son, Matthew 1:21. You ought to give him the name Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. Jesus came to save us from sin. Implication, I have a sin problem that I need saving from. And let's be real here. As we look at the flock of people around us and us caught up in that flock, property obsession, let's call it what it really is, it's greed. Status obsession, let's call it what it really is, it's pride. Body image obsession, let's call it what it really is, it's vanity. And Jesus looks at people and says, a couple of chapters later in Matthew's account of Jesus' life, he looks at people and says, Matthew 7:11, if you then, though you're evil, know how to give good gifts to your children. And I hear that and I hear the last part of the sentence and Jesus says, you know how to give good gifts to your children. I think, yeah, I took Monday afternoon off and my little boy, I picked him up from school and I took him to Luna Park and we had a great time on the wild mouse together and hurtling around. I know how to give good gifts to my little boy. And I'm feeling smug, but then I read the first part of the verse. If you then know you're evil, and I feel Jesus slapping me across the face. Jesus can actually judge me for my pride, for my vanity, for my greed, and at the same time look at me and be extraordinarily compassionate. And so Jesus, as he looks at me and looks at you as we come up out of the railway station, get off the bus, he says, 37, he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. There's big crowds, large numbers of people coming out of the railway station. They're overwhelming. We need more people out there talking to the crowds. And so Jesus says, pray. Speak to God about it. 38, ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Here we are at City Bible Forum. And I don't know what your position is with God. Every so often the organisers here do a little survey. And Peter, as he's been briefing me, as I've been taking on this new responsibility of speaking here, says 30-40% of the people here are not regularly part of any church. And you just come along and you're just kind of kicking the tires, checking out God, checking out relationship with God, checking out Christianity, checking out Jesus. I mean, there's lots of people here who are established in a Christian church, but lots who just, maybe a friend has just invited them from the office, whatever. If you're here, I'm really glad. And so my expectation today is you hear this diagnosis, that the problem that Jesus is speaking about, whereas he's talking about harassed people and helpless people and sheep without a shepherd, and you might just be at the point of, yeah, well, maybe I'm prepared to admit that I've got an issue in my life with this. I was meeting a senior guy, and we spent several months looking at the Bible together. I mean, it wasn't that we spent all day every day for several months, but we met up with each other in a coffee shop and we opened the Bible together. And after a couple of months, he said to me, Dominic, as I've been thinking about my life, I can see that my life is out of order. In that, I mean, not that the people at work would know, I present a very together exterior at work, but my relationships, and he was being very honest at this point, he said the number of women who've been through my bedroom. And a long time ago, he'd had a daughter with one of them. She's 13 now. And life is really messy. And he could see that he was sheep without a shepherd. Harassed, helpless. I mean, not that the people that were... I mean, they would see him as a pretty together guy. But maybe that's your situation. I mean, you present the corporate together image in the office when you go back in 20 minutes... But it's not going that well with your husband, really. and you don't know what to do about it. Or you're struggling and wishing you had a wife and you don't know what to do about that. And it's not going that well at work. And you might just be prepared to say to Jesus, I am in the crowd and I'm going through the daily grind and I'm going and it's every day, it's just the same. And I'm frazzled by it, and if I'm really honest, yeah, I am a sheep without a shepherd. And you're just at the point of being prepared to concede that to Jesus. But you're certainly not at the point of wanting to think about the solution for all the other sheep in the CBD. But what I'd like to ask you to do just for a few minutes is to walk with me, to think with me. And at the very least, this will have the effect of, if you're a guest here at the City Bible Forum, or perhaps even a regular, you'll get a bit of a sense of the mindset of the organisers of the meeting here, of Peter, of Craig, of Liz, of Tara, of Russ, as they come to organise the City Bible Forum and the Econ Christian Ministry. You'll start to get a glimpse of the way they think about things. And here's the issue. Given that Jesus has seen the problems that he's seen the crowds harassed and helpless. Given that Jesus has the emotion that he has, the emotion of compassion. Given that Jesus has been doing what he's been doing for 3-4 months, and here's his prescription, chapter 10, sentence 1. Here it is. He called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out evil spirits, to heal every disease and sickness. That's a very big thing. In the history of the Bible up until this point, God has only given this kind of authority to two people, to Elijah and Elisha. And so now Jesus has just walked on the scene and he's been doing it for a couple of chapters. We've been here at the City Bible Forum. We saw chapter 8 of Matthew's Gospel a couple of weeks ago, chapter 9 last week. And he was doing the stuff. He was raising the dead. He was healing people. He was curing people. He was doing the driving out of demons. He was doing it. And now he says, you 12, you go do it. Very significant, I think, that it's 12. Because right at the beginning of the people of the Jews, God called 12 people together. Well, actually, Jacob had 12 sons. And those 12 men became the patriarchs, the head of the 12 tribes of Israel. God formed a people with 12. And here you have a new man who's come along and he's called 12 together, 12. And he says, I've got a job for you to do. We're doing the inbreaking of the kingdom of God. 12 apostles, 2. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who is called Peter. Then his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. He gives them the authority to drive out every disease, heal every sickness, every one. There's not one that they cannot do. These guys have ultimate authority over sickness, just like Jesus. You've been following through the last couple of weeks, you'd know. What Jesus is doing is he's just giving them the authority that he's got. And so I take it the significance of what they're doing is the same as the significance of what he was doing. What was the significance of what he was doing? Let me just review from a couple of weeks ago. Beginning of time, God made the world. He establishes us to live on his world, to rule his world under him. But it's not long after we've got that job of ruling the world under him, and it is us that's ruling the world. It's not cats and dogs, it's not chimpanzees, it's not whales, it's not monkeys. It's people. Humanity says, get lost, God. I want to do my thing, go my way. We declare autonomy. We snub God. We walk away from him. We act independent. God says, I'm going to judge you. There's going to be a punishment. And the punishment is sickness, death, pain. And then what happens when Jesus comes on the scene? He comes to reverse the punishment, to undo the punishment, to take the punishment. He does it in the big picture in his death on the cross, dying to pay for the sin of all humanity. But in the little picture, as he interacts with all sorts of people, there are these cameos, little incidents where he walks into a woman's life and says, that bleeding you've had for 12 years, stop. where he walks into a man who hasn't walked for 30 years life and he says, get up. And it's just a little cameo of undoing the effects of evil. And so these guys, these 12, go out and they do it. They undo the effects of evil. They do the Jesus thing. Here's the instruction. Sentence five, these 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not go among the Gentiles or into any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. I don't know how you react to that sentence, but I'm not Jewish. Haven't got Jewish background. No Jewish ancestors in my line. And so I kind of feel a bit left out. I take it if you're somebody of Jewish extraction, you're here today, great you're here, and you wouldn't be feeling left out at this point. But if you're like me and you haven't got a Jewish lineage, you're feeling a bit, hang on, what, Jesus, why did you just say go to the Jews? I take it, just incidentally, that is one of the reasons why this statement here cannot be used as a mandate for Christian ministry today. Just directly, as a direct jump. And so, I'll show you why, actually. Just you see, a little later on in Matthew's account of Jesus' life, after his death, after his resurrection, at Matthew chapter 28, sentence 16, so right at the end of the account, Matthew says, or Jesus says, then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. Interesting. Here at Matthew 28, he doesn't say Jews only. He says go to all people. So I take it that the Jews only command gets overruled. And now it's for everyone. And so the message of Jesus, if you're here like me and you're not Jewish, then it's for you, it's for me as well. But also you'll note that when Jesus gives this lasting command that has implications and application right down the centuries to today, well, he doesn't give them again that same authority. He doesn't give the authority that you've got a chest infection, I'll heal it. You've not been able to walk for 30 years. I'll fix them. You've got a disease. You've got a demon. I'll fix that. We don't get that kind of authority, that instantaneous power that the disciples, that 12, the original 12, got back then. I think there is a gift of healing that swirls around in the Christian church today, but I don't think it comes with the same kind of order of magnitude authority that those 12 got from Jesus. Sentence 7, as you go, Jesus says, preach this message, the kingdom of heaven is near. And this is something that does get repeated by Jesus at a number of points, and I think this bit has got direct application for today because it's the same thing that he tells them to preach later on and all over the place. The kingdom of heaven's near. This is what you've got to say. Heaven's about to happen. It's just about time for heaven. Are you ready for heaven? I mean, that's a question, isn't it, that's worth posing today? I mean, in fact, it's not just that I might think it's worth posing. Jesus tells me to pose it. He said, as you go, this is what you've got to say. And so, if somehow the lottery's ended up, that I've got the job of preaching today, and that's what happened, what does Jesus want me to say to you today? He says, tell them the kingdom of heaven is near. And ask them, are they ready for the kingdom of heaven? How would you know if you're ready for the kingdom? That's a good question, isn't it? How could I tell if I'm ready for the kingdom of heaven? Well, I think the good question would be, is Jesus your king? Am I living under his rule? Have I made an intentional decision to live under the rule of Jesus? Or am I still acting independently? For me, it was 21 years and 4 weeks ago that I made an intentional decision to live under the kingship of Jesus. And I know that it was that weekend that I made the decision. It was actually that weekend in Katoomba that I made the decision. I was up with a group of friends in the Blue Mountains, and I had driven up to Katoomba. One of my friends, actually, who I still know, told me that I drove like a... She turned up at 2UE where I was working, and she and her two sisters turned up. Security guard at 2UE said, "Dominic, there's three girls with sleeping bags waiting for you in reception." And I said, "Oh, I'm going away on a church weekend." He said, because he knew me, I didn't look like a Christian at all. He said, "Right." I drove these three girls up. And very clearly, I was living for myself, doing my own thing, running my life my own way. But I can tell that I changed. Because I drove back that weekend and I started making decisions that weren't decisions that I wanted to do, but were decisions that reflected that I was under the reign of the King. They were things that Jesus wanted me to do. So I ask you, are you under the King's reign? He keeps going. He's speaking to the disciples as they go out to speak. He says in sentence 8, "Freely you've received, freely give. Don't take any gold or silver or copper in your belts. Take no bag for the journey or extra tunic or sandals or a staff. The worker's worth his keep." He's saying, you go preach and people will look after you. People will support you. And who will support him? Who will stand by the preacher? Who will stand by God's agent? Well, it's the person who believes and receives the message of the preacher. And here's the key bit for us. How you react to the person who has come from Jesus will tell you how you react to Jesus. See, here's the first person. The first person offers hospitality and says, "Look, I want to stand with this agent from Jesus." 11, "Whatever town or village you enter, search for some worthy person there. Stay at his house till you leave. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it's not, let your peace return to you." You welcome Jesus' man when they come into your office. I mean, perhaps you're just checking out Christ. And then somebody from your office, maybe there's three or four of you here from the office, and you end up having a conversation with Peter Caldor or Russ or one of the team here, and they say, "Look, why don't we run an office Easter event in your company?" Well, that's pretty put me on the spot, hasn't it? Am I for these guys or against these guys? Am I for Jesus or am I against Jesus? How you react to them and that question will tell you how you're reacting to Jesus. Because that's what Jesus says here. If somebody welcomes you, you'll know they're from me and you'll know they're mine. If somebody rejects you, well, what's the thing there? Verse 14. "If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake the dust off your feet when you leave that home or town or company. I tell you the truth, it'll be more bearable for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town." And I've been responsible for helping set up a number of Christian ministries and various media companies. And it's very interesting when we go in and we say to some people, "Would you like to help us?" And we're in the throes of trying to do it at the moment. Some people run towards us and say, "We'd like to be with you and we'd like to stand with you and we'd like to stand with Jesus. And other people say, "Look, they run away, really. They keep their eyes focused on the terminal and will not look up. Head down." And Jesus says to them, "I tell you the truth, it'll be more bearable for Sodom and Gomorrah." That means it's going to be bad. And here is a challenge to every Christian in the CBD, because it's a challenge to be authentic. Here's a challenge to every person in the CBD. It's a challenge to be authentically Jesus's. Not just Jesus's person at home. Not just Jesus's person reading the Bible on the train on the way to work. Not just Jesus's person at church. Not just Jesus is in the suburb, but Jesus is in the city. Jesus authentically. What does this city need? I'm going to run to conclusion in a moment. If you haven't filled in one of those questions, you want to just quickly get to work on the question and jot a question down. Peter's going to come and make a couple of little admin announcements, and then I'm going to, and we're just going to zip around and collect those questions, and then I'm going to come and have a shot at answering those questions in Gilchrist style. What this city needs. The government says we need more infrastructure. Mr. Yemma says we need to sort out the traffic jams when the King and Queen Mary comes next time. We've got to do something about the problem of house prices. It's too expensive to buy a house for anyone in their 20s or 30s. What does Jesus say this city needs? He looks at the crowds coming up out of Town Hall Station, harassed and helpless sheep without a shepherd. says they need a shepherd. They need a ruler. They need a leader. They need a guide. So he sends out his followers to speak, say the kingdom of heaven is near. And really, it's that same message 2 millennia later. The kingdom of heaven is near. 2 questions come, 2 challenges to jot down in your notes, take home, ponder on the train on the way home. Question 1, are you living under the reign of the King authentically? And question 2, are you praying for the Lord to send out more workers in the harvest? Are you backing those workers?